Whenever you hear this music on First Stop, it means, well, it could mean a couple of things. We're talking about the night at the Roxbury. More likely, we're joined by our Raptors reporter, Josh Lewenberg. And Jay Lou, good morning, and sup?
Sup?
Sup, boys?
Sup, buddy?
So, Josh, I mean, the Toronto Raptors in the first half last night, tough defensive performance. You tweeted it out, at JLou1050. They allowed 42 points in the paint in the first half alone. And clearly Nick Nurse went into the locker room at halftime and said, "Sup, boys, play some defense," because in the second half, it was a completely different story, my man.
Yeah, and I'm not going to call it the best win of the season because it wasn't, but I think there's a case to be made that this was the most important win of the season so far. I mean, just given the way things have been going recently, they've been teetering on the edge of disaster with some of these losses and the way that they've been playing defensively. And I just think if they go on to lose that game last night, the narrative obviously today is completely different, especially with the way it looked like they were going on to lose that game, allowing 71 points in the first half. So to be able to turn things around and win that game all of a sudden, yeah, I mean, the narrative has shifted. We've got all these fun individual storylines to talk about, all these fun performances. Scotty Barnes in the second quarter, Precious Achiuwa in the third quarter, Gary Trent in the fourth quarter, the way that Fred VanVleet closed things out. Obviously, some great minutes from Malachi Flynn there as well, Utah Watanabe in his return. And with a win against Indiana on Friday, they could somehow close this road trip out with a .500 record, which seems crazy considering some of the defensive issues they've had, some of the injuries that they've had. So, yeah, a pretty big and important win, all things considered.
Well, Josh, you talked about the win, and AK mentioned about the adjustments that they made at halftime. And I think most people, especially in Toronto, and maybe you can tell us about how most people feel in the NBA about Nick Nurse, would label him as a very good, probably top-notch coach in the NBA, but to hear the comments from Dylan Brooks yesterday post-game, you know, reflecting on the game and the loss, complimenting Nick Nurse for being a guru, I mean, would you classify him as the same way?
Well, he's very well-regarded, well-respected around the NBA amongst other players. Just, I mean, a little bit strange in the sense that, like, I mean, you hear guys, Kevin Durant basically said the same thing when Brooklyn was in Toronto. You hear guys talk about, like, the experienced coaches, the coaches that have been doing it in the NBA for a really, really long time. That's sort of the language that people use towards, like, Pop or Spo. You don't often hear it about guys that have been a head coach in the NBA for 3-4 years, but Nick Nurse has led the Raptors to a championship. And, yeah, I think you get guys' attention when you're as adaptive as Nick Nurse is. The things that he's thrown at other superstars over the last few years, the janky defense with Steph Curry. I mean, at the time, I'm sure Steph was like, "Well, what the hell is this?" But obviously, the results were what they were, and that gets people's attention. So, yeah, I think, listen, I mean, I know the guys love to play for him. I think he's earned the respect around the league. And it's not just like he's a player's coach, right? I mean, I think in some ways he is, and guys respect him for that. But we've also seen over the years he's not shy in terms of lighting guys up publicly, challenging players. I think that, I mean, that earns players respect as well, right? Because he's doing what it takes to get the best out of his guys, and that style of coaching might not be for everybody, but I think more often than not, that's the style of coaching that gets results.
Josh Lewenberg, our Raptors reporter here at TSN, is our guest. The Raptors beat with Josh and Nikki Reyes going at 10 a.m., so about 35 minutes away. You're going to want to stick around for that. And Jaylee, when I think about great trades in Raptors history, clearly Kawhi Leonard being acquired comes to mind. The Kyle Lowry deal. I think the Serge Ibaka trade when he was traded for Terrence Ross in a first-round pick.
Yep.
But the Gary Trent trade, trading Norman Powell and getting Gary Trent and, what, they get Rodney Hood in return as well. I mean, that might not be at the Kawhi Leonard level, I think that's fair to say, but what an acquisition. He's been so good this year. Last night, another example, in the fourth quarter, 17 points, was just on fire. He's had an incredible season so far, Josh, exceeding basically everybody's expectations, right? I don't think anyone had Gary Trent averaging almost 18 points a game this year.
No, I think some people were a little bit concerned about the contract. I mean, I think most people wanted him back, but maybe thought that the contract itself was a bit of an overpay over the summer, because one of the things when the Raptors made that trade, Norm Powell to Portland, Gary Trent to Toronto, one of the reasons why we thought, okay, this makes sense at the time, was the Raptors just weren't willing or able to spend the kind of money that would have taken to re-sign Norman Powell, and figured, okay, trading for a younger guy that's going to come in, he's a free agent, but he's going to probably be less money to hang on to than Norman Powell. And in the end, they ended up costing the same annually, almost identical contracts in terms of annual value. But there are a few things that still stand out. I mean, obviously, one of the things that was attractive to the Raptors at the time, just given Norman Powell's situation as an unrestricted free agent, he was really going to restrict what the Raptors were able to do in the summer, just in terms of flexibility because of his cap hold. Gary Trent Jr. had a smaller cap hold, a restricted free agent, so more flexibility, more control over what happened in free agency. But yeah, the other thing is Gary Trent is 22 years old. He's younger, probably a better fit in terms of the Raptors' developmental timeline. And obviously they could see that last year in terms of where this was headed, the Raptors going younger, a big reason why, sort of a mutual thing with Kyle Lowry, a mutual understanding that it was time to go move on there. And then I think with Norm as well, like, okay, bring in this guy in Trent, younger, maybe a higher upside, especially on the defensive end. And I know they really liked that initially, is like they saw his upside defensively as being higher than Norm's. I just don't think they believed that he would develop this quickly defensively. They talk about what he's doing offensively, and he's been great offensively, and I think that's been needed on a team that doesn't have a ton of shooting and the ability to score in bunches the way that Gary Trent does. But defensively, he leads the league in steals. He leads the league in deflections. He's been really good on that end too. And then, yeah, in terms of the offense, there aren't too many players in the league, and certainly not on this team, that can go on a heater the way that Gary does. When he gets hot, he's putting points up on the board quickly, and that's been really, really important for this team this year. So, yeah, I think he's been a great fit since stepping into the starting lineup. Like, at some point, the Raptors are going to have to make a decision here, right? Because at some point, hopefully, knock on wood, you would think that they get healthy. OG comes back. Pascal is now back. They get Ken Birch back. Do they start Birch at the five? Do you go bigger? Do you go smaller? Trent's one of those guys that could potentially come out of the lineup, but I'm not sure how you take him out right now, given how he's playing.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's a good problem to have if you're Nick Nurse. I can't see them taking him out either. I mean, especially with how good he's looked without OG Anunoby in the lineup. And I guess my question to you is, what's the latest on OG? I know there was maybe some hope that he might play last night. Didn't play, missed his fourth straight game, but do you have an update on his health status and when the Raptors could potentially welcome him back?
Well, it sounds like it's a 1 to 3 week thing. Not minor, but not super serious or long-term either, as long as there's not a fracture in the hip, which it doesn't sound like there is in terms of the hip pointer. Like, it's one of those things that could keep him out of a handful of games. And he's already missed a few, but the fact that he's now being listed as questionable for the last couple of games, and it's been sort of a game time thing, I mean, obviously that's encouraging in the sense that they're not ruling him out earlier. So I do think he is getting close. It sounded like there was a chance that he could play yesterday in Memphis, so I think there's probably an even better chance that we see him in Indiana on Friday, and if not, then he'll be back likely for the start of this long homestand coming up starting on Sunday against Boston. And yeah, they could really use him. Defense has been a major issue for this team over the last few weeks, and certainly with him out. And then I thought with Ken Burch out yesterday too, and that's why, again, I say it was such an important win to be able to do that without arguably your two most important defenders. I know most people would agree OG is your best defender, your most important defender. I think people would probably argue that fact that Ken is your second most important. I just think, especially when you look at what Memphis was able to do in the paint in the first half, yeah, there are some great individual defenders on this team, and Fred VanVleet is probably number two, but Birch slots in pretty high after that, just based on what he brings and all the little things that he does, his rebounding, his rim protection. The Raptors still haven't had their full lineup, their full rotation for any game this season. Hopefully that's coming soon.
J-Lew, this conversation might be a tad premature, but let's have it anyways. What do you think the likelihood is that Fred VanVleet is an NBA All-Star this year?
I think there's a good chance. I think he's deserving of it right now, especially if the Raptors continue to hover around this 500 mark. I think if they're having the type of season they were having last year and the losses are piling up, it's always hard to get an All-Star no matter how great any individual player is playing. There's two parts of it, right? You need to, individually, you need to be having a great season, but there also needs to be enough team success that either fans or, in this case, more likely coaches want to vote for you, because that's what it's going to take here. I mean, Fred VanVleet, Pascal Siakam, OG Anunoby, any of these players that are going to have a case for it, like, they're not getting in through the fans this year, and they know that as well. Like, I think if you're going to get a player into the All-Star game this year, it's going to be through the coaches with the reserves. The issue is, I just mentioned three names, and with Siakam just coming back from injury, you could probably limit it to the two. OG has missed some time here too, but assuming that he's back soon and only misses a small handful of games, he's going to have a serious case as well. So I'm wondering if, and this is a problem we talk about often as well, is maybe if you've got a couple guys that are up for it, maybe they take votes away from each other and they split votes amongst the coaches. But Fred, in the same way that, and we used to talk about this with Kyle Lowry all the time, he's so well-respected amongst the coaches. So even if it's the fans that don't necessarily acknowledge his value and what a great season he's having, I do think that he's one of those guys, especially if the Raptors are a playoff-caliber team, that's going to get a lot of credit from the coaches. So I think there's a pretty good chance. And he was close last year, too. So that's another thing working in his favor, is there's this trajectory. He's been trending in this direction of being an All-Star. He's not a guy that's just coming out of nowhere this year.
Josh, I want to ask you about LeBron James. The last two games, he has been the focus of negativity in the NBA. I mean, you talk about what the melee he started in Detroit with his punch to the face of Isaiah Stewart, and then in his return yesterday in Indiana, he purposely walked over to a ref and asked him to eject two fans that were sitting on courtside. And my question to you is, LeBron James on a mission to be the most hated player in the NBA right now?
There's like a villainous streak. He just woke up one day last week and just said, I think I'm going to be a villain this year. No, I mean, it's a fun storyline, I guess. But it's interesting because the NBA, I mean, there's always this like perception that LeBron's got his own set of rules that he can do whatever he wants. They're not going to call fouls on him. They're certainly not going to discipline him in any way. But he gets the one-game suspension, which I'll admit, I was a little bit surprised. I thought Isaiah Stewart would get a game for escalating the on-court melee. And then I figured LeBron maybe would get fined at most, in addition to the ejection. But he gets suspended for one game, and we'll see what the NBA does about his little celebration yesterday, because we know that they hit Fred VanVleet with that fine for for his obscene gesture. So yeah, maybe things starting to come around a little bit. Well, he's definitely putting pressure on the NBA and Adam Silver, because we know they don't like disappointing LeBron in this way. But hey, if he's going down this road of villainy, they may not have a choice.
Yeah, I don't know if LeBron can handle like a $20,000 fine. His, you know, the bank account of one LeBron James a little light these days. You know, what was he worth, $1 billion? So, you know, the message could very well be sent. Yeah.
Poor guy.
Yeah, I know. It's tough. It's tough. Well, we'll be listening at 10 a.m. for the Raptors beat with you and Nikki, J.Lew. Any exciting teases you could give us and the audience when we tune in at 10 a.m.?
We're doing our first mailbag segment today. Something that we wanted to do for a while. Get the listeners involved. Take some questions. And we got some interesting ones. Let's just say there are a lot of questions about Pascal Siakam, as there usually are. And got a few about Chris Boucher as well. He hasn't been playing well recently. People want to know about these guys that haven't been playing well. A lot of trade questions.
All right. Well, I'm pumped. I'll be dialed in at 10 a.m., as I hope
the
our
beat.
Audience is as well.
The Raptors beat.
The Raptors beat. Maybe, yes. I'm sure it'll be a good one, as always, J.Lew. So thank you very much for doing this, my friend. And as always, sup.
Sup, buddy.
Sup. I guess sup's more of a greeting than a goodbye, but in any case, goodbye, Josh. Thank you. He's gone.
All right.
Oh, there, he's still there. Okay.
What did you call him? The disciple of sup or something like that?
I think the sultan of sup.
The sultan of sup, yes.
Mike Johnson is the prince.
What's up? 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 What's up?